Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Theodore Postel, who's a professor of science, technology, and national security policy at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Previously, he worked as the Congressional Office of Technology Assessment and as a science and policy advisor to the Chief of Naval Operations. He's won awards for uncovering and publicizing false claims about missile defenses and currently researches ballistic missile defense technologies, fraud in the U.S. missile defense programs, and works to reduce nuclear dangers. Welcome to Background Briefing, Theodore Postel.
Nice to be here.
And today, of course, in his annual State of the Nation address in Russia, Vladimir Putin bragged about Russia's new hypersonic nuclear cruise missile and nuclear torpedo, which were depicted on a giant video screen in a simulated attack on Florida. And he claimed that these new weapons are invincible. But the point is that this seems to be, I know when we last spoke, you were, well, we've spoken over the years, but you've been concerned about the dangers of nuclear war in South Asia and the deteriorating Russian nuclear infrastructure. But what has happened is that Russia's invested in its nuclear infrastructure and new weapons systems because we have moved towards missile defense. And I take it you believe that what Putin showcased today is a direct consequence of our emphasis on missile defense.
Well, I think it's certainly the case. I think the United States has been modernizing its strike forces, particularly the ballistic missile forces, so as to have even higher kill capabilities against very hard military installations in Russia, also in China as well. And this dramatic increase in the kill capability of U.S. forces, actually by a factor of almost three in terms of the ability to destroy numbers of targets, is certainly causing concern in Russian military and political circles. It creates the appearance, whether or not the United States actually intends to do this, it creates the appearance that we think we can fight and win a nuclear war, or we at least want to have the option to fight and win a nuclear war against Russia. In combination with missile defenses, that also creates the appearance that we are trying to not only have a strike capability, but a capability to reduce the consequences of a Russian retaliation. Now, these weapons that Putin is emphasizing right now are weapons that not even in theory could be dealt with by ballistic missile defenses. These are weapons that fly, in one case, flies very low and fast and could not be engaged by ballistic missile defenses, which try to shoot down targets at high altitude. And, of course, the underwater torpedo or super torpedo, whatever one wants to call it, could only be intercepted in principle with some kind of anti-submarine weapon, but this would not be, in practical terms, it would not be possible because of the speed of this weapon would be so high that it would be impractical to use torpedoes or depth bombs against it. So what he's basically saying in terms of pointing at these weapon systems is that the United States should never hope to be able to gain an advantage on Russia by attacking it first and then using its missile defenses. This is, of course, in the context of this nuclear policy review that the Pentagon just issued, where it emphasizes the principle that the United States could strike first with many nuclear weapons if it chose to. So one has to understand that the Russians might actually believe what we're saying. And if they do, they should be scared. And my assessment is that they're pretty worried about what's going on in the American nuclear arsenal right now.
But we've seen this bad movie before. In November of 1983, there was a nuclear war scare over the Able Archer NATO exercise, which is inherently a first use of nuclear weapons, because the belief was that the Warsaw Pact had a preponderance of conventional weaponry. And the aging gerontocracy in the Kremlin believed it literally when Ronald Reagan referred to Russia as the evil empire, that they'd end up on the ash heap of history. And when Cap Weinberger talked about nuclear decapitation, they took that very personally and they were scared to death. And we almost had a nuclear war out of the perceptions on the Russian side that we were out to get them. So here we are again. This is crazy.
Well, I think the only way to reduce the chances of these kinds of mistakes is to recognize, to recognize a simple fact, that it is not possible, it is in no way possible to fight and win a nuclear war between these two large states. It's the amount of damage the nuclear weapons would do would be so great that it would affect the other state and their friends and allies at levels beyond anything we have ever contemplated in terms of human catastrophes. And that's not a that statement I made is not based on some kind of opinion about policy. It's based on a factual evaluation of the physical effects of nuclear weapons. So anyone who wants to debate this better get their physics book out and explain how you're not going to have these secondary consequences of nuclear weapons. So you can wave your hands all you want and say somebody is unrealistic. You know, if you have more imagination, you can imagine fighting and winning. But that is a total fantasy with regard to the physical realities associated with the use of these weapons. And right now, you have a lot of people running around, as we did during the Cold War, saying, oh, if you're a big thinker, I sometimes think of them as no thinkers, if you're a big thinker, you would understand that if you're willing to think out of the box, you would understand that these possibilities are real. Well, these possibilities are not real. They're based on a misunderstanding of the effects of nuclear weapons, which is a physical phenomenon. So my belief is that the only sensible way for both of these great nuclear powers to deal with each other is to basically acknowledge, not only verbally, but in terms of how one modernizes their nuclear weapon systems, is to acknowledge that you can only use these weapons in the hope you can deter something from happening that would lead to nuclear weapons being used. But to use these weapons in any way that resembles warfighting as if it were conventional, like, you know, using traditional weapons that are not nuclear, is just a fantasy. So, and the Russians have from time to time made that position clear. That was not their view in the very early days of the nuclear arms race. They actually had managed to construct a false system of beliefs that they could fight and win at some level in a nuclear war. And they understood later that turned out, you know, after a long series of talks, assessments, being advised by their own physics establishment, people like Andrei Sakharov, for instance, who one of their great heroes in physics, that this was just absolute craziness and that the net result would be the destruction of the then Soviet Union, and now, of course, it would be Russia. So we need to get back to these basic physical recognitions and acknowledgments of physical reality.
Well, what you're referring to there, Theodore Postol, is that the U.S., along with Sakharov, worked together to convince the Russian military leaders and the Kremlin that there was no point in nuclear defense. That's why we came up with the anti-ballistic missile treaty, because the recognition was that you can always saturate nuclear defense with more offense. and that if you go to the ABM defense route, all you'll do is stimulate the offense. So
it is what we've been doing with Russia now.
Right, but it became the fundamentals of arms control, that actually by disarming yourself in the sense that you don't have any protection, you were therefore limiting the number of nuclear weapons. And the minute you go into this fantasy land of Star Wars and nuclear defense, all you do is stimulate the offense. And now we found that Putin's found another way around it by having these systems that aren't ballistic, that are cruise missiles, low-flying, or torpedoes. So the lesson has not been learned.
Well, I think it's important. It's important to step back and realize that this is a consequence of current U.S. policies. I don't like, fighting for, against the Russians or for them, but I think it's important to depoliticize this debate and think of it in terms of the logic that each side must confront when they look at the behavior of the other side. If the other side looks like it thinks it can build defenses, which is the way we're behaving, that can cause it to escape the existential consequences of a nuclear attack, then the Russians at some level do not have much choice but to show in a demonstrable way that this is a fantasy. And this is one way Putin and his colleagues are trying to show that. This is not a statement that he's a good guy or a bad guy or anything. He's just doing what makes logical sense if he takes U.S. activities seriously. And I don't see how he can avoid taking them seriously. We take everything, and we should, we take everything that the Russians do seriously, and I don't see why they shouldn't take seriously what we do.
Well, there have been studies that indicate that if, for example, Pakistan and India have a nuclear war, and that's not exactly a very stable front there, and the Pakistanis, have the fastest growing nuclear arsenal, the estimates are that a use of these nuclear weapons in South Asia could result in so much topsoil being thrown up into the atmosphere that would be radioactive that it could destroy global agriculture. So that's a...
Yeah, in particular, it's not... You're basically right, but it's the detail is that there would be vast fires caused by these nuclear attacks on cities. These fires would create enormous amounts of smoke. That smoke would get carried to high altitudes and dissipated and distributed over the globe. And this would lead to a somewhat cooler general surface temperature. And that would be enough to cause mass starvation throughout the world. So it's just a small, in quotes, quote-unquote, nuclear war between India and Pakistan could do global damage on a tremendous scale through the secondary effects. You can imagine how bad it would be with a major confrontation of these states in the Northern Hemisphere. But it's true what you're saying. The details are not quite accurate, but, I think you got it right. That a small war, small by some bizarre standard, it would not be small, of course, because of the millions of deaths, tens of millions of deaths that would happen in South Asia, but it would be small compared to what could happen between the United States and Russia. And, and that alone would have a catastrophic impact on the global environment. You can't have a nuclear war and not have these global consequences. It's just a simple, plain, physical fact of nuclear weapons phenomenology. Anybody who claims to be a realist and claims otherwise is ignorant. They are really ignorant of the basic physical facts associated with nuclear weapons. They're not some kind of open-minded realist who's just being tough. They just are simply ignorant of the physical phenomenology.
Well, apparently, though, the very discussions that we're having are going on in the White House over North Korea, that basically Trump wants to do something. and the military leaders, Mattis, McMaster, and apparently are saying, no, it's not going to work. There's no such thing as a limited or a bloody nose attack. And apparently the president's quite frustrated by that. So this is, extraordinary that we're even, and of course the president has said, why do we have nuclear weapons if we don't use them? And, which flies in the face of the very notion of deterrence. So that's what concerns me. Now, a lot of people are concerned about Trump's mental state and whether he's a suitable steward and should have access to the nuclear codes. But what we learn about him from what we're learning about the White House is not very comforting, particularly when it comes to North Korea.
No, I think it's very important that people in political leadership roles understand these basic fundamental facts associated with the use of nuclear weapons that we've been talking about. It may be one small ray of light in this, which I'm not arguing one should readily expect, is that our military leaders, whether we agree with them or not in many areas, I know many, I'm fortunate enough over many years to have known many, senior military officers. And whether or not I have agreed with them politically, and in many cases I haven't, I think they are all totally committed to defending the Constitution of the United States and the United States. And that is different from believing that you must follow the orders of a president if they are unlawful and if they would result in the destruction of the United States. So I'm not saying we should expect it, but I think we should not, if I were Trump, I would not be sanguine in the idea that if I ordered a nuclear attack, I wouldn't have mass resignations from my top military and that the Congress wouldn't intervene. I'm not suggesting that this is something we should hope for or that we should depend on, but I think it will not be as easy in all likelihood for Trump to order something like that unless we got somehow into a crisis mode where nobody where everybody was poised to use the weapons, full crisis, like the Cuban Missile Crisis or something like that. But other than those circumstances, which can happen, which is one of the reasons why we should be very careful, I am not sure at all that our military would follow an order to use these weapons. I don't sit around being comfortable with that thought, but I would certainly support them if they did that.
Well, Theodore Pastalla, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
I hope it's been helpful talking.
It has been, and I thank you. And again, I've been speaking with Theodore Pastalla, who's a professor of science, technology, and national security policy at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Previously, he worked at the Congressional Office of Technology Assessment as a science and policy advisor to the Chief of Naval Operations. He has won awards for uncovering and publicizing false claims about missile defenses and currently researches ballistic missile defense technology, fraud in the U.S. missile defense program, and works to reduce nuclear dangers. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. We can contact me and scroll down the right-hand side and sign up for iTunes podcasts. And I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.